Right, so we're holding on Pei Vav Amud Bet. That one is worse. We're holding up on Pei Vav Amud Bet. Two lines from the bottom. Actually, three lines from the bottom. The line begins below.
Okay.
Okay, so we're in the middle of the mission, actually, talking about the rules for wine, talking about the rules for wine to be used for nesachim. We were discussing, we're learning more. Okay, so we were talking about places, you can taste. Your taste is closer to me than it is today.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello. I'm sorry. We're giving
All right. So we were in the middle of the Mishnah. Pei Vav on the base, three lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of discussing the rules for wine for nesachim. We mentioned the places where they'd bring wines from, what kinds of vineyards you can bring the wine from, what the quality of the wine has to be like, etc. So now as far as, okay, so now you have a certain quality of wine from a certain place. We said that you shouldn't bring Hil Yostin, which is wine where the grapes are sweetened by the sun, but the Bedi'evet is kosher. We mentioned this machlokas Rebbe and the Chachamim, whether you can bring old wine. We'll see in the Gemara why. You can't bring sweetened wine, meaning where not sweetened artificially, but where sweet, where it's naturally sweet, or smoked or cooked, and it's possible, and if you do, it's possible. The vines themselves shouldn't be trellised. They shouldn't be hanging off a framework, as they often do. They should be lying on the ground. And the vineyard should be, the ground there should be worked around the vines to aerate the rules. So now the roots. So that's all the type of wine you need to have. Now what do we do with the wine? So the Mishnah says, "Well, like coins to nice about half seven."
Say, "Grow trellis, you cannot."
It's not that. No, we're saying that. Well, clearly you shouldn't. Well, clearly you should be bringing some. Okay. Bedi'evet, I guess the Mishnah didn't say one way or the other. So I guess bedi'evet, it's okay. Okay, so the Mishnah says, "Well, like coins to nice about half seven gedolim, they wouldn't put the wine into big barrels because then the problem is you're only taking out a certain amount at a time." So Rashi Ksav Yad says, just because big barrels, pognim tam yad, says they ruin the taste of the wine, doesn't elaborate why. Miyuchas Rashi says, because since you only take out a bit at a time, then that each time, I guess, you have more oxygen, more whatever getting into the barrel, and after a while it'll spoil, as opposed to if it's a smaller barrel, you have fewer times that you're opening it. Anyway, so not the chasavim gedolim, but like the chobiyas kanis. On the other hand, you also shouldn't be putting it into very small containers. I'm sorry, Ella Bachavius Kanis, rather, only in small containers. We'll see in the Gemara what a little bit different.
What's more?
We'll see. Another rule, you shouldn't fill up the barrel all the way to the top. This way the aroma of it will spread when you open it up. So Miyuchas Rashi says, when it's not completely full, the aroma of the wine, hey, whatever they call it in modern terms, spreads more. Actually, Miyuchas Rashi says also, when it's completely full, then the aroma of it just goes out. It doesn't stay within the barrel. You want it to stay, and actually, it's a Pharisee stroke.
I mean, if it's full on top, it's one.
No, in other words, you don't want it all the way full. And in fact, the Pharisee stroke is a practical reason for it. This way, the airspace at the top of the barrel will help sort of insulate it from the outside air, so that the outside air doesn't affect the wine too much. Okay.
Did you say the barrel has to be of wood?
No. In fact, barrels in those times generally were made out of earthenware. Wooden barrels is a medieval thing. Well, you have in many places in Trap where barrels break, yeah, and you have to be careful. But yeah.
More so than with wood.
I guess so. But wooden barrels is a medieval thing. It's not a good
one. Do they use wooden barrels today?
Nowadays, I think they use wooden barrels. Yeah.
Okay. No, they use metal barrels.
No, they don't. Where metal barrels react to the wine and spoil.
No. They line it up with
maybe
wood.
Maybe, yeah. Okay.
They don't use
all right, anyway. Fine. Okay. Continues the mission. In a maven pia, now when it comes to drawing off the wine that you're going to be using from a nafas, you don't take from the top of the barrel. Because at the top over there float bits of mold. You have kmachin literally means flour, because you have when wine starts getting moldy, which it would because they didn't have refrigerated, kemach means flour, because they look like little bits of flour floating in the wine. So you don't want to bring it from the top, because then you're going to have that in there. The lime is shaleah, you also don't want to take from the bottom of the barrel, because you have the dregs over there that fall to the bottom. Rather, what you do is you take the wine from the third of it from the middle. So there's a couple of different explanations of what exactly that means. Rashi Ksav Yad says that what it means is you put the faucet or the hole, whatever, from which you're tapping, which you're tapping for the wine, in the middle of the barrel. And that way you're getting wine from the, like, so you're getting wine from, like, the middle third of the barrel. Yeah, so you have a couple of other possibilities of what it means, because on the face of it, then the Mishnah could have just said man claw, that you put it in the middle. That's the Rashash wants to say, that what it means is anywhere the middle third is acceptable. Yeah. There's also the Rambam has a different understanding of it, and apparently the Rambam had a different girsa over here that, like Mishlisha Umem saw, namely the middle, that not only the middle third, but also the Rambam seems to learn that, based on the Gemara that we'll see, based on his Girsa in the Gemara that we'll see soon, that the barrels have to be stacked three high. And Davka, the one that you want to use for Nesachim, would be the middle one in the stack. So not the top one, not the bottom one, only the middle one, I guess, because that one's the best insulated, I don't know, whatever it is. Hello. So Mishlisha Umam Saw, according to the Rambam, would be the middle third of the middle third of the barrel, which is the middle one in the stack of three. Okay.
What distance does it make if it's the middle part of the...
Because again, like towards the top, the middle of the row, the Rambam doesn't explain why, but I guess the reason is because the one on the bottom is close to the ground, and therefore the ground may have an effect on it. The one on top is closest to the top of the building. I don't know, whatever it is. I guess the middle one is best insulated. I don't know. Okay. Case that Hupoidik. So the Mishnah continues to how do we check to make sure that the wine is good quality and acceptable for Nesachim? A Gizbo Yoshev. So you have somebody is selling wine to the Beit HaMikdash for Nesachim. One of the treasurers of the Beit HaMikdash sits there. V'hakone b'yadei. He has a stick in his hand. Rashi says, Amatambida, a measuring stick. I guess they would use it on an ongoing basis. I mean, the Gizbar often has to deal with things like construction projects around the Beit HaMikdash or other contracting jobs or whatever. So I guess he would regularly carry around a ruler with him. Zorak Hagir, there comes a point when you're tapping the barrel and you're getting wine out of it, there comes a point where there comes out gir. Now, gir literally means chalk. So Rashi Ksavyad explains that means the dregs that are near the bottom of the barrel. When that starts coming out, and it's like chalk, I guess, because it's slightly solid. You have other explanations also. You have Miyochas Rashi says that similarly that it means the whitish stuff that's right above the dregs. And you have other explanations also. There's also a Girsa Gid that it means like a gid, like a long, narrow thing. Like this, you have a stream of wine coming out, but then you have a point where it starts like looking a little more solid because you have dregs or mold or whatever in it. So then Hikish Fakone, the Gizbar sitting there, bangs with a stick as a signal to stop tapping the wine at that point. We'll see in the Gemara why he didn't say stop. But so yeah. Rabbi Yossi Bibi Hoda says no. Not like you, Tanakama, said that if the wine has mold floating at the top, you can't use that part of the wine, but the rest of the barrel is acceptable. No. Chiyeshwe Kmachin Possible. If the wine has mold floating in it, then it's completely possible. You can't just taste in the middle of the barrel where the mold is. Shenema, because the pasuk says, Smimim Yulachem Amin Chosam. You have one pasuk, two psukim actually back-to-back in Parshas Pinchas, where it mentions by the korbanos of one of the Yomim Tovim, Pesach, it uses the expression tmimim yulachem, and the next pasuk begins umin chosam. So from that we learn that the menachot has to be tmimim. And later on in the parak, when it talks about the korbanos of Shavuot, it finishes off tmimim yulachem v'niskehem. That's all in one pasuk. That they meaning the animals, should be tumim for you, and the nesachim, meaning that the nesachim also have to be tumim. If they have mold in them, then it's not tumim, then it's like a baal mold. So therefore, it would be completely possible. Say.
Why would we have a minute when the first time to say it should be kosher?
Because
it has mold.
It has mold at the top,
yeah,
fine. Because you still have the other parts of the wine don't have mold in it. The mold has floated to the top, so it came from the sides of the barrel or whatever, but it's not mixed throughout the wine. It's floating at the top, therefore the Tanakhama considers it acceptable, as long as you don't get any of that into the actual wine for the Nesachim. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. When we said in the Mishnah, Ein Mevi'in Le'Mosek V'Le'Mevushel V'Le'Mevushkan, we said you're not allowed to use wine that's sweet. By the way, Rashi in the Mishnah had given two explanations of sweet. One of them means that the grapes themselves were oversweet, and therefore the wine that's made from them ends up being sweeter than normal. The other explanation is that Mosek over here meant grape juice, where it hasn't fermented into wine yet. Okay, so the Mishnah said you can't use sweet, v'lem v'ushal, or wine that was cooked, v'lem ushan, or wine that had been exposed to smoke, v'im hevi posel, and we said if you use any such wine, if you try to use any such wine from the sachem, it would be posel. The question is, v'akatoni reisha, in v'vien esil yotzayin. We said earlier in the Mishnah that you're not supposed to be using esil yotzayin, which we said is wine where the grapes were sweetened by the sun, either meaning that they were, either meaning after they were picked, they were hung in the sun, in the sunlight to sweeten. No, the question is, it's a contradiction, because the Mishnah had said, being hey, be kosher. The Mishnah had said about her yotzayin that if you bring it, again, we're talking about that the grapes were hung up in the sun after they were picked, or we mean that they were moved around on the vine in order to catch the most sunlight in order to develop more sugar in them. But we said, you're not supposed to use that, but b'di'evit is kosher. So what is it? Is sweet wine possible even b'di'evit, or is it kosher b'di'evit? So we said in the Mishnah, in the bin, ho yotzion, bin hevi kosher. 8 lines from the bottom. And then a couple of lines later, 6 lines from the bottom of a pipe of a base, we say, in the bin, lemosik, lemotion, lemobushel. So what is it? Is sweet wine kosher, b'di'evit, or is it completely possible? So Ravina says, you're right, you have to combine those two statements in the Mishnah together. Meaning, Rashi learns, therefore, what it means is, we would have to say, not like the way we have the wording in our Mishnah, we would have to say that Til Yostion is possible even to the Eben. And therefore, that would fit with the next part about sweet wine being possible even to the Eben. In other words, basically, the Mishnah would be giving a reason. Why is Til Yostion possible? Because over sweet wine is possible.
So not the Braisa.
There's no Braisa over here. There's two parts of our Mishnah. The later part of the Mishnah is clarifying the earlier part and saying that they're both that any kind of over sweet wine is possible.
Why? Because it's sweet.
Because it's over sweet. Because it's not good quality wine. Okay, Choisvus learns differently. Choisvus learns that actually what Ravina means to say is that both of them would be cautious in the Yevon. So when the Mishnah says Til Yostion is kosher b'di'evit, Ravina would learn, therefore, when the Mishnah continues that if you bring Mosik, sweet, then b'di'evit is possible. No, we would say the Mishnah actually means that you should change the wording of the Mishnah and both of them are kosher b'di'evit. Okay. Rav Ashi says you don't need to say that. You don't need to change the wording of the Mishnah. The difference is from kosher to possible, as the case may be, because the difference is Chulya d'shim shalemoy. The sweetness that comes in the grapes because they were exposed too much to the sun, that's not so meistic. It's not that it's lower quality wine, but it's not so disgusting that it should make the wine completely possible. Chulya d'peira, but when the fruit itself is naturally sweet for some other reason, then that is moist. That's more disgusting. That's more repulsive, and therefore such wine would be possible for nesachim. So therefore, we can leave the Mishnah the way we have it.
I'll call you for sure.
Therefore, we can leave the Mishnah the way we have it, that Hil Yostern is kosher b'di'evit, and other naturally sweet wine is possible even b'di'evit, and that indeed is how the Rambam
has to change the
Lashon. No, we don't have to change the Lashon. That's Rav Ashi's point. We don't have to change the Lashon. We have a difference. There's a difference between Hil Yostern, which was caused by the sun, versus other kinds of sweetness.
Vim
Hevi kosher versus Mosik, Eim Vim Le Mosik, Vim Hevi kosher. That's the point. Rav Ashi is saying there's a difference. And that's indeed the halakha. Going on, the Mishnah had said, "Ein mevi'im yoshin de Rebbe." Rebbe had said, "You can't bring old wine." The chum says kosher. So, what's the omachiski? My time of the Rebbe. Why would Rebbe say that old wine is kosher? So like this, omakra lakeves yoyin. You have a process again in connection with the Mosafim, in this case with Rosh Chodesh, where it mentions that you have to bring a certain amount for each sheep of wine. And since the word keves and the word yayin are next to each other, that means there's a hefesh, there's a certain similarity between them. Ma keves ben shnasa, just like the sheep for the musaf has to be within a year old, ach yayin ben shnasa, the same way the wine has to be within a year old. So therefore, if it's any older than that, then it would be like sheep, that's older than that, it would be possible. The question is, ma keves ben shtei shanim possible, ach yayin ben shtei shanim possible. Okay, by that logic, you would say, when does a keves become possible? As soon as it reaches its second year, does that mean Rebbe would say it is, in fact, only kosher its first year? V'chitei mahokin nami, he might say, yeah, maybe Rebbe says it does have to be in its first year. Can't be, v'hatanya, because we learn in a braisa, yayin ben shtei shanim lo yovi, you should not bring wine in its second year, v'imhevi kosher, but if you did bring it, v'dievet is kosher. Now, that can't be according to the Tanakhama of, that can't be according to the Chachamim, rather, of our Mishnah, because the Chachamim said it's a blanket statement of kosher, implying no matter how old it is, as long as it's still good quality, it's okay. Man shamet leidu amal yavi. Which Tana are we saying that say that says there's a certain time limit that you shouldn't be bringing old wine? Rebbe, v'ka'amah in heavy kosher, and yet this Braita, which presumably then is Rebbe's opinion, has to be saying, is saying that if you brought wine in its second year, it's v'dieved kosher. Whereas with kvasim, it wouldn't be like that. The kvasim for the masafim have to be within a year old, and if we learn elsewhere in the Gemara that if they're even a couple of hours older than 1 year, then they're already kosher. So obviously, then it can't be that Rebbe is comparing the wine to the kvasim and therefore saying. Ella, Omar Rava, Hainu, Time of the Rebbe. So now, no, Rava says, rather, the Rebbe's reason is, Bichtiv, it's based on a pasuk initially, Al Tera Yayin Ki Yis Adam, don't look at the wine when it's red. The context of the pasuk is, Shlomo HaMelech's warning about the dangers of getting drunk. So there, in other words, like, don't be looking, like, to drink the wine, and you really like it, because it's appealing and in color, because it looks red. The point being, in other words, that we see that there's something about the best kind of wine is when it's red. So therefore, when wine is not too old, it's still bright red. After that, it starts the redness starts dulling or disappearing or whatever. It becomes a different, because it's not quite as red as before.
Exactly.
So therefore, so Rebbe is not going to say that it's only kosher within its first year, like the Kalafim. He'll agree it's still b'dieved kosher during the second year. But beyond that already, the color is changing, and therefore it's not such a good quality.
Second, if you have a color that's red up to the third or fourth year, what is it? It's kosher? It's not kosher?
Apparently, according to Rebbe, the idea would be as long as it has its red color. Okay, according to the Chacham, it wouldn't matter. As long as it hasn't actually spoiled or whatever, yeah.
What's the halacha?
The halacha is like the chachamim. It is kosher no matter how old it is. L'chatchila you should be bringing it within its first year. Even,
yeah.
By the way, you have the.
You see, by the Achashverosh, he gave people the wine
that was
older than him.
The point is, there is a certain advantage. There is a certain advantage to older wine. That's true. But on the other hand, we're saying over here, from the point of view of the color, it's not really the best thing. By the way, you have a Machlokas Rishonim based on Gemara and Bava Basra on the question: would you be allowed to use white wine for Nesachim? On the basis of our Gemara over here, Alter Yayin Kis Adam, does it mean that Davka has to be red wine? Or would it mean that, no, as long as it's white wine, that's Machlokas Rishonim. Okay.
And the
Abakosis
has got to be red wine.
The Abakosis preferably should be red because that way it remembers the Dam in Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. However, Shulchan Aruch points out in times and places where there were blood libels, and you could use white wine.
Uh-huh. You put a drop of red wine in the white wine.
Yeah, okay. Bechal, we talked about yesterday the question, we talked briefly yesterday about the question whether the rules for wine for Kiddush and other things are the same as the rules for the wine for Nesachim. They're definitely not all the same because, for example, wine for Kiddush doesn't have to be from Raglius, Krum, and Avodim, and Davka stored in small barrels, etc. But on the other hand, for example, you have, when our Mishnah said that you can't use for Nesachim, you can't use Yain Mavushal, so you have some Rishonim learn on the basis of a Gemara, again, on the basis of a Sugya in Bava Basra, that therefore wine that's Mavushal would also be possible for Kiddush. And then you have other Rishonim who learn that, no, the things that we mentioned in our Mishnah that are possible because the wine has spoiled or whatever, for example, when there's mold in it or start turning to vinegar or whatever, that would be the kind of possible for Kiddush, but not for example, Mavushal. Right.
Okay. That's why they say,
Mavushal
for
the place is
good.
Right.
Okay. The
halacha
is you can use
Mavushal. Yeah, that's good. Onward. The Mishnah said, "Eimavim in Adolius Kula." We said that you shouldn't bring the wine from the Sochem from grapevines that have been trellised. Rather, you should bring from ones that are lying on the ground. I haven't seen anything in the Mepharshim explaining why that should be, but I guess the idea is, I mean, since the grapevines don't naturally grow that way, then if you have to trellis them, it probably, I mean, I guess they have to spend, so to speak, like they have to use some of their energy holding themselves up or whatever on the trellis. And therefore, I guess the grapes from them are not as high quality as when they're able to just lie on the ground. I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Since the dawn of time, people have also sometimes done ragulis. They don't have to. In halacha, you have, by the way, for example, when it comes to the halacha of Kalayim, you have a whole Mishnayos and Rambam. It was in Rambam Perek Echad not so long ago in Hilchos Kalayim, that you have grapevines that are left to grow in their natural state, and they have one rule as far as how far away you need to plant grain or vegetables or whatever, and then you have trellis ones where you have other rules, so people could grow them either way. Okay.
The good ones are left on the ground. Apparently
the better ones are left on the ground. Should be someplace on here. I don't remember which one, but you can go ahead and try. Okay. Yeah. All right. The point is, anyway, the Gemara is not going to focus on that part. The Gemara is focusing actually on the next part of the Mishnah that said that it's supposed to be umin akramim ha'avudim. It's supposed to be from vineyards that have been worked, meaning that where the ground was dug up, was hoed up around the roots in order to get them more air and water. We learn in a bright. Specifically, that is that these vineyards should have had this treatment done to them twice a year. That's the kind where you get good wine out of them. And in fact, when you dig or hoe or whatever around the roots of the vine twice a year, in order that more air gets to them, in order that more water reaches them. Yeah. And in fact, the Gemara tells Rabbi Yosef Havel like counted a pardesa. Rabbi Yosef had a corner of a vineyard. The Rafik based Faviska, he did this. He dug around the vineyards an extra time, twice a year, around the vines, twice a year, like he just said in the Braisa. The Obed Chamra, the Dori Maya, Al-Khad Train, and it produced wine that was such good quality that they had to dilute it with water twice as much as usual. Usual, regular wine, we find throughout Shas, had to be diluted one part wine to two or three parts water in order to make it drinkable, to cut down the alcohol content, and because it was syrupy or whatever, the wine from Rabbi Yosef's vines, where he hoed around them twice a year, was such good quality that they would have to mix it with four or six parts water for it to be drinkable. Because we have more on it. Because his wine was so potent, was so strong, alcoholic, was syrupy or whatever it is, that they had to dilute it with extra water. That was the result of the extra treatment that he gave to it, like it said in this recipe.
Two-thirds water.
So it had to be. Normally you would have two-thirds water, but like this, you had to have like five-sixths water. That's how strong it was.
Okay.
Then the Mishnah said, we said that they didn't put the wine in large barrels, but rather the Mishnah said they put it in small barrels. So the Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Chovius, Cadius, Ludius, Benanius. Specifically, what they would do is they would put it into barrels that are small, like a cab, which means a jug, Ludius, Benanius, which are the size of the medium-sized jugs that they make in Lud. That's what so in other words, some Mephoshim explain that the Braisa is clarifying what our Mishnah says. Other Mephoshim, especially based on a different Girsa, say that actually what it means is the Braisa is somewhat disagreeing with the Mishnah. We all agree it shouldn't be in big barrels, but the Mishnah said it should be in small ones, and the Braisa is a medium-sized one. What medium-sized ones are the size that they make in law?
Okay.
I don't know, but whatever it was, I guess in those times they knew what that
meant.
Because we're not making wine for Nesachim. When Mashiach comes and they have to start making wine for Nesachim again, they can figure it out. Because the Braille says times, they understood what that meant. It's like nowadays, if you say something is the size of a milk carton, people will understand what you mean. 100 years ago, nobody would have had any idea. You know, that's how it is. Okay. Onward. Also, ein manichanoisim shtayim shtayim. We don't put, when we store the barrels, we don't put them at two together, because the problem is, Rashi says, if one of them starts spoiling and then giving off an odor, then the other one is going to start getting affected by it also.
One
next to each other. Now, I mentioned before that Amnam understands that you have to have them stacked three on top of each other, one, two, three.
Yeah.
So therefore, that Amnam evidently had a different girsa of the Noisa Kalim. And that Amnam said he had a different girsa in our Gemara. You shouldn't store them singly. You shouldn't store them just one on top of the other. You should store them one on top of the other on top of the other. You should store them in columns of three. And then with the one in the middle, well, so they're separate barrels, but the one in the middle is the ideal one for taking the sausage from. We said in the Mishnah, Kesed Boidek, how do you check the wine to make sure that no dregs or whatever get into it? We said, Gizbo Yosha Bekana Biyade, the Gizbo is sitting there holding the stick in his hand, Zorak HaGir, and once the gear, the dregs or the whitish stuff or the foam or whatever the exact explanation was, starts coming out, Hikish Bekana, then he bangs with the stick as a signal, stop pouring. Stop, we'll close up the hole, close the fourth or whatever, and stop pouring. So, Tana, we learn in Brayta, so what does gir mean? Zora hagir shel shmarim. It means once this gir of dregs of the wine starts coming out, gizbor hikish bakona, then the gizbor bangs with the stick as a signal to stop, to close up the hole.
Towards the bottom of the barrel.
Towards the bottom of the barrel, yeah. Okay, so the question is, no, so then at that point, you stop up the hole and stop getting any more wine out.
When he
bangs with a stick.
When he bangs when exactly?
When he sees that gear, dregs or foam or whatever the exact explanation is, starts coming out. Okay, so the question is, why does he just say stop? Why does he bang with a stick as a signal? The answer is, this statement, by the way, I mean, you have actually the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos understands the Hikish Bakona to mean actually that he uses stick to divert the wine in a different direction so it doesn't flow into, like this, you have it coming out of the barrel and going into the container that you're filling up. If he starts seeing gear start coming out, he's going to use a stick to move it that way, and that way they'll know to quickly close it off, so that way that part is not going to get into the container. Anyway, the question is, why isn't he safe? The answer is, Messiah of Rabbi Yechanan, the state this that we're saying supports what Rabbi Yechanan says. The Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Keshem Shah Dibu Yofel of Samin, just as speaking is good for spices, and we say every day in davening, Mephnei Shah Kol Yofel of Samin. Hodik, what do they say while they're grinding? Hodik, Hatev, Hodik, because Mephnei Shah Kol Yofel of Samin. So just as, it means exactly what it sounds like, that the sound, it means that the sound of a person's voice is good for the grinding of the spices. Yeah, it makes a better quality product when it comes to spices. But the same way as the fat, kach dibur ra l'yayin. So when it comes to wine, it's the opposite. Speech is bad for the wine. Therefore, you don't want to speak. Therefore, better you just bang with the stick as a signal to stop. No, that's the idea. In other words, when you're grinding spices, better you should be talking or saying things like hodicative, whatever. When it comes to measuring wine, better you should be quiet. And that's why he bangs with the stick as a signal to stop. The Sun Kodshin actually says a vort on it, a remez on it. He says the idea is because the summon we know of something that you have to find in other Gemaras, there's something that the Neshama has Hanah from. That's why we smell them on Mosh Shabbos. When it comes to the Neshama, speech in Divrei Torah, another such thing, is good for the Neshama. On the other hand, wine, he says, represents gashmius, that it benefits the body. When it comes to gashmiastic things, speaking is not necessarily the best thing. There's certain kinds of speech that are not so good. He's doing it for the best mix, but still, it's the idea, in other words, that's, yeah. Okay. Then he said in the Mishnah, Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda, although we said Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda had said that if the wine has mold in it, then it's completely possible, not like the Tanakhama had said that it is kosher, you just have to make sure that the mold doesn't get into the container that you're filling up. So Rabbi Yochanan asks a similar question to the ones that we had on previous blocks, and here you have the girsa that you have a girsa, not Rabbi Yochanan, but Rava, who asked the questions in the previous one. If a person is makdish such wine, according to Rabbi Yochanan, would he get malchus as if he had been makdish an animal that was a baal mum? Do we say kibben the possible for baal mum domi? Do we say since it's possible it's exactly like a baal mum? And just like there's one of the 613 mitzvahs is not to be makdish an animal that has a mum. That, or I don't remember whether it's that or some other pasuk, whatever teaches us that you're not allowed to be makdish a baal mum. And if you do, then it's then like any other lav, and a person gets malchus. So do we say the same thing should apply there? No, of course, for sure not. So, given the possible kabal mum, I mean, since it's possible, it should be like a baal mum. Or yoma ein baal mum ela bebehema, or maybe the whole concept of a baal mum only applies to an animal.
We had
that question before about wood, about oil, about flour, and here we have it as far as wine. And again, the answer is teku. Like by all the other ones, the answer is teku. So he doesn't get malchus, but he gets makas malchus. We saw the other day that Advaz explained that he asked all four questions, but in a different order. First, he asked about wood, which is not really at all like a korban. Then when he didn't get an answer to that, he asked about wine, which is slightly more like a korban because he poured on mezeach, but on the other hand, doesn't go into the fire. Then oil, then flour, and each time the answer is taken. Okay. So that's yeah. Okay. But now we've discussed, so the previous Mishnayos have discussed now where they would get flour from Menachos. They're the best places to get flour, the best places to get oil, and the best places to get wine. So now we're going to talk about it. Now Braita is going to tell us, what about animals for Korbanos? What's the best places for those? We learn in a Braita. Elim Mimoyim. Rams, they would get from Moyim, because there they have the best quality ones. Kvasim, younger sheep, which are within... Yeah, why not? They could buy their bottom from Moyim, okay. Kvasim Mechevron. We had a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that discussed the question whether you're allowed to buy animals for korbanos from goyim because is there a problem that maybe they've done revia with them? Moyav wouldn't make a difference versus them or any other goyim. We talked about it. I think we had Rabbi Yezer over there said you're not allowed to, but we said that the halacha is not like that. The halacha is you are allowed to because when they're selling them, they're not going to do revia to them because that weakens it. It damages their fertility or whatever it is in there, and therefore they're not going to do it. They know they're...
I thought this was only by
a paraduma. But is not a problem when they...
No,
we discussed that in connection with paraduma as well. But yeah. Revia is bestiality.
Oh.
Yeah. As far as Avodah Zarah also, I mean, if they worshipped it as an Avodah Zarah, they're not going to go and be selling it.
Yeah, it's a great dream for
them. I guess, according to it, so either Rabbi Eliezer might disagree with this Braita, or he might say, Moyav means from Jews who live in Moyav and raise animals over there, I don't know. Okay. Kvasim Mechevron, younger sheep they would bring from Chevron. And in fact, you have a Gemara in a couple of places, in Sosa and in Tmura, that mentions, you have a Pasuk that mentions Avshalom, says wants to start his rebellion against David, so he goes to Hebron to start his rebellion. But what excuse does he give David that he's going to Hebron? He says, I'm going to go and bring a korban to Hashem over there. Now, why should he bring in Hebron? There's a Mizbeach in Hebron, there's a Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. He was saying in Yerushalayim, so why should he have to go? That's the question. Why should he go to Hebron? So the Gemara in those places explained that his excuse was he's going to Hebron to get sheep for the korban over there. Because you see, from this Braita, the best quality sheep come from Hebron. Okay. Agolim Mishorim, they would get calves, baby cattle for korbanos. Mishorim from the Shorim, which is a valley in Eretz Yisrael. I think nowadays it's in modern terms, I think it would be more or less the area north of Tel Aviv, but I'm not sure. Yeah, the Hoda Sharon, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's more or less like north northwest of Tel Aviv, kind of anyway. Goizlois Mehara Melech, and then birds, birds for Korbanos, the best ones came from Hara Melech, which is a mountainous area in Eretz Yisrael. You have in the story of about the Korban and Gittin, it mentions that it used to be a very, very heavily populated Jewish area of Eretz Yisrael. But afterwards, it was destroyed during one of the wars with the Romans, and after that, it was mostly resettled by Goyim. Anyway, okay. Rabbi Yehuda says when it comes to the sheep, there's a special kind of sheep that they bring. Mevi'im kvasim shegoyvhan kerochvan. They would have sheep that are just as tall as they are wide, meaning they're very wide because they're very fat sheep. So their width is equal to their height. Rashi brings another view, Tashiyu Gabdeim Rechavim, that they have very wide backs. Same idea. They're very fat, so their backs are very wide. Tosfos brings from a Medrash in Bereshit Rabbah, actually, on this file, in this week's Parsha, on Parsha's Toldos, that says that specifically the ones that they used for the Tomid were really extra tall. They could eat from the tops of cedar trees, which are tall trees. And they were so tall that if they put them on top of camels and carry them from one place to another, the feet of the sheep would drag on the ground. Now, you think of how tall a camel is, do you realize how big these sheep were that the Medrash is describing?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, my time is Rav Yehuda. What's Rav Yehuda's reason that the sheep should be extra wide? The sheep, we have a process. Yireh Niknecha Bayeimahu, Kar Nilchav, a Nebuah in Yeshaya, talking about how things will be when things are good for the Jewish people, primarily in Mashiach's time, to a certain extent in Chizkiyahu's time, that your cattle on that day will pasture Kar Nilchav, meaning Karim Rechavim, now she says, wide sheep. We see that the best quality is when the sheep are very wide, very fat.
Now you don't see it as much.
Okay. Since we mentioned something that Rav Bar Rav Shila said, so now we're going to bring another thing that he said. Steve, you have a pasuk speaking also of Yeshaya. A pasuk, Al Chamisayich Yerushalayim Yizkad Tishon. And on your wall, Yerushalayim, I have appointed guards. All day and all night, they're constant and they're never silent. Let's say it's an Atorah, it's an Atorah, Parshat Nisabin. Hashem is saying, Hamakirim, that's Hashem al domi lachem. Those who are mentioning Hashem, don't be quiet. So the simple meaning you would say is talking about people who are looking forward to the Geula and are constantly, at all times, davening and begging Hashem for the Geula. But the Gemara is understanding that these Chomerim are actually Malachim. So the question is, my Amri, if we're saying al domi tomid lo yashu, that they're never quiet, so my Amri, what do they say? The Hochi Amra Rav Barashila, they're saying the Pasuk, Apa Tokum Turachim Tzion, you Hashem should arise and have Rachmanis on Tzion. Yes, we say it every day in that. Rav Nachman Reis Kofama, they say a different Pasuk, Bone Yerushalayim Hashem. Hashem is the one who rebuilds Yerushalayim. One idea is Apa Tokum Turachim Tzion, it's talking about the future, that's a request for the future. Bone Yerushalayim Hashem means it should be an ongoing thing, not just something for the future. Okay, so the question is, when the Ikra Mai Havra Amri, okay, so we're saying that now they're saying this after the Churban. Before the Churban, what were these same Malachim saying? Amr Rav Bar Shila, they were saying the Pasuk, Ki Bocha Hashem B'Tzion, Ivo L'moy Shavloy, Hashem has chosen Tzion and desired that it should be his place for him to dwell. To dwell, to rest, right? And then it was destroyed, so then they had to say, then now they said, Tzokim Atta Tzokim Tzorachim Tzion, or Boni Yerushalayim Hashem. Marshall points out, by the way, there's something interesting about the word Ivo. We know the famous thing from the end of Parashat Tishalach, where it says over there after the war with Amalek, Ki Yod Al-Kate Yud-Ke, the famous thing, Ein Achite Shalom Ve'Ein Hashem Shalom, that Hashem's throne and Hashem's name are not complete until Amalek is wiped out. Well, what are the letters that are missing? The Aleph of Kise and the Vav He of Hashem's name. That's the letters Ivo over here. Ivo, the Moshe of Light, when will it be that you have the Beth Mikdash is fully the resting place of Hashem forever? That's going to be when Ivo, when you have the Aleph and the Vav Hey back in the Kisei and back in Hashem's name.
Ivo is what? Because the Hashem's name?
What?
Ivo.
Yeah, no, Ivo itself is not a name of Hashem, but it represents the Aleph of the word Kisei and the Vav Hey of that's missing from Hashem's name. Ivo, the simple meaning is he desired, like in Moshe Taiva. Hashem has chosen Tzion, Ivo, he desired it, L'moish of life for his dwelling place. Hadron alach kol kavonis
hatzibah. Like a warning, basically.
Yeah, well, not. Okay.
It's in Shir
HaShirim, no? Yeah, you probably have that loshin someplace. You probably have that shirish someplace in Shir HaShirim. I'm not honest to think about it. Okay. So now this next parak is going to be dealing with, we've been talking throughout the Masechta that we have, there's menachos have a certain size, the amount of flour with them, the amount of flour, the amount of oil is a certain size, so they have to have measuring utensils for that. So our parak is going to talk about these measuring utensils and what they did with them. Also, in the course of that, we're going to talk about the lighting of the menorah, because one of these kelim was used for measuring out the oil for the menorah. So in the middle of our parak, we're going to have a discussion about the lighting of the menorah. Yeah, appropriate, because Hanukkah is a month away. Mishnah says, "Shtei midas shoyavish hayu b'mikdash." There were two types of measuring cups for dry things, meaning flour, in the Beit Mikdash. Doesn't mean there were only two. It means there were two types, and there were many copies of each of these two types. But then you could bring many menachos at once. Isarin v'chatzi isarin. They had an isarin measure, and they had a half isarin measure. And we'll see. Yeah, it was a measuring cup. Rav Meir Omer, they had three. Isorin, Isorin, Vachati Isorin. They had two types of Isorin, as we'll see in the Gemara. And then they had also a half Isorin. Isorin Mahayim Meshamesh. Now what do they have? What do they use the Isorin measure for? Shaboy Hayim Meir, the Chol HaManachos. That's what they measured the flour for all Manachos for, because every mincha has to be a minimum of one Isorin. No, it's not. Well, no, because the Mishnah continues. Loi hoya moided loi b'shloi shalapar v'loi b'shal shnayim la'ayil. Now you have when a tzidru brings a par for a korban, and it's accompanied with minchas nesachim, it's accompanied by mincha containing flour and oil. The pasuk says you have to have three esroinim of flour. When you bring an ayil, which is a ram, you have to have two esroinim of flour. So the Mishnah is telling us, you don't have a three isorin measuring cup for the par, or a two isorin measuring cup for the ayil. Ela moided on esroinus, I mean, you measure them one isorin at a time, and then you pour them into another container.
Why don't you have a three?
We'll see in the Gemara.
They have less than, but
we'll see in the Gemara why. The question is, why didn't they have a three and a two? We'll see in the Gemara why. Okay. see Isarin Mahoy Mashamish. Next, what did they use the half Isarin for? Shaboy Hoy Modus Chabite Kohen God or Mechtababoko, Mechtabain Abayim. We've learned earlier in the text that he had the Chabite Kohen God, or the Kohen Mincha of the Kohen God that's brought, and Isarin flour is brought every day, and half of it is offered in the morning and half in the afternoon. So they needed a half Isarin to measure that out. Okay. So you want to start though. Tanya, we learned in a brass, huh? Now again, we said in the Mishnah that Tanakama had said that, yeah.
They didn't have cups with two and cups with three.
That doesn't explain why they wouldn't have had a two or a three to measure two things of two or three. We'll see in the Gemara why they didn't have two or three. Okay. The point is, again, the Tanakhama has said in our Mishnah you only have one Isarin, one type of Isarin, and Rav Meir said he had two types. So let's talk about that. Tanya, we're learning a Braisa. Hoyer Rav Meir Omer, Ma Tamad Loimer Isarin Makevas Achad, yet another pasuk in connection with the Menacha, in connection with the Mustafim, where it says Isarin for each sheep. So why the extra? So the simple meaning it means one Isarin each. So that's the usual way in the Torah. When it repeats a word, it means each. But he darshan Malamet Shtei Isarin as Hoyer B'Mikdash. From that we learn, he says that there were two types of Isarin measures in the Beth Mikdash. Echad Godush VeEchad Mosuk. One was made in such a way that it holds any Isarin only when it's heaped up. So in other words, the actual container itself up to the rim would hold less than any Isarin. But the Gemara talks about in various places that a container can hold as much as a half of its initial capacity heaped up. In other words, if you have a container, let's say to put it in modern terms, if you have a container that could hold 2 pounds, just up to the rim, then you could heap it up and it will hold 3 pounds. Depends on how wide the container is, obviously, but we're talking about if it's ideally shaped. So here they would do the same thing. The container up to the rim would hold only like about two-thirds of an Isarin, and then you'd have a heap on top of it and you'd have a total Isarin out of that. So you have two-thirds inside and one-third heaped up on top. Yeah. That was one. Ve'echad mochok, and the other one was made to hold an Isarin when it's full to the rim without any heaping.
They're
shaped differently or size differently. The process of the size differently.
So one was,
yeah,
when it's full completely.
Yeah.
And the other one was two-thirds.
So the one would be that when it's full to the rim, and the other one would be when it holds any star and only when it's heaped up. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. God was the Solomon. So now what it was is like the one that held any star and only when it's heaped up, that one they would use to measure all the monopolies. When a person brings a mincha, an Isarin, they would measure it using that smaller one where it only holds an Isarin when it's heaped up. One reason is, some of the Mephoshim say, because that way it looks nicer, it looks like it's a larger carbon.
But
as long as the container...
Could be higher, could be lower.
No, so they would have to make sure it's an exact Isarin, that's depending on the shape of the container. They would have to make, they'd make sure, I don't know, I guess they'd by experience, I guess, when they know what the shape of the heap on top is, and they know. No, you'd eyeball it, I guess.
It's above the ring.
Yeah, but I guess they'd eyeball it. I guess. Mochuk, the one that holds exactly any Isarin up to the rim, that would be specifically Shaboy Hoyam Murder the Chavite Kohen Gadol. That one specifically they would use for measuring out the Chavite Kohen Gadol. And the reason why, so Meyuchas Rashi says, and Tosfos also brings on Amar Aleph, if they used one that had a heaping measure for the Chavite Kohen Gadol, the problem is that you have to divide it into two, because you have to divide half in the Torah into the morning, half in the afternoon. If you use that one, it would spill. So therefore, for that one, the mayor says they made a special one special larger one where it holds any Isarin only when it's flattened out. And that way it won't spill. Whereas for the other menachas, they could use the heat one. Hey, the Chachamim Omrim, then we said in the Mishnah, the Chachamim say, Loi ha yashama ala Isarin echad. Nope, there was only one type of Isarin measure.
So you
say Isarin. Shenema be Isarin echad lacheva sa echad. Because you have a different passage that says one Isarin for one sheep. And the word echad, the first echad over there is extra. The word Isarin itself automatically means one. So the word echad is extra, so therefore it means davka, it means there was only one type of Isarin. Im kein mas hamad laima Isarin. So, say the Chachamim, so what do we do with the pasuk Isarin Isarin? That means lodabes chasi Isarin. That comes to teach us that there was a second measuring cup, but not another Isarin, like Yura Meir say, but rather the half Isarin that we said in our Mishnah, for measuring out the Chavitic Kohen Gadol. Yeah, okay, but then instead, the pasuk says Isarin, Isarin, meaning there's two measuring cups that are related to an Isarin. One is a holy Isarin, and the other one is a half Isarin. So the question is, but a mayor chafi isorim melvei. Okay, a mayor agrees in our Mishnah that they did have a half isorim, and they had to, because they had to divide up the chavit kohen gadol. According to him, where are we learning from the psukim that you had a half isorim measure? The answer is nafkalim vi isorim. He learns because you have a pasuk, yet another pasuk in connection with the korbanos of the first day of Sukkot, where it says vi isorim isorim makevus ha'achad. So therefore, we have isorim isorim, and also the vav. So that teaches us, therefore, to be Kalim. So there you go. Two Esrona, two Isor and Isor is the two Kalim, and the Vav is the half. Virabonon, where is the Rabonon? Vav like Daoshi. They don't Daoshi in the Vav like that, so therefore they're left with all these two.
It's rarely Daoshi in the Vav.
Not rarely. We have different sometimes. We've had a Masechta sometimes of Shimon Daoshi in it, and sometimes not. What about the mayor Ivy Soren Echad Lakevasa Echad my Ovidai? My Ovidai, fine. What is your mayor doing with the Soren Echad, which the Chachamim are saying Echad means there's only one type of Soren? The answer is Hahu. I'm learning from that pasuk, says your mayor, what we said in our Mishnah. Shalo Yimde Loibishal Shloishal Apor Veloibishal Shnaim La'ayah. The word Soren Echad means there's no measuring cup that's larger than one Soren. Even when it comes to the Purim or the Elim, where you need multiple Esronim for your Mincha, nevertheless, you only measure them with the one Isarin contained. That's where we learn that, he says, from the Isarin Echad. Okay, for Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say, Nafkaluhumi Nikudai. Yeah, but they learn it from the Nikud. When I first looked at this Gemara, I thought they meant the Nikud as in the Nikudus, Kamas, Patach, etc. But the Nikudus are Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, but they weren't written down in the times of the Gemara yet. So no, the Gemara is not referring to that. The Gemara is actually referring to you sometimes have in the Sefer Torah, you have dots over certain letters. We have in Parshas Vayera, we have the letters Aleph, Vav, Yod, and Elov. In the same story, you have 10 places in Chumash where you have dots over letters. You have Vayishakehu in Parshas Vayishlach. So here you have, in the Korbanos of the first day of Sukkot, when it says this word Ve'isarin, in connection with the Menachos, there's a dot over the second Vav of the word Ve'isarin. So the Chacham said, we darshin from that dot. Ditani, as we learn in a place, Amar Rav Yosi, Lomo Nakud Vav Shebeemsa Isarin, Shal Isarin Rishon Shal Yom Tov Rishon Shal Chag. Why is there a dot over the letter Vav, over the second letter Vav, of the word Isarin, of the Menachos of the first day of Sukkot? That teaches us, now, and a dot in general means like we're excluding something. Like, for example, by Yishakehu, the dots tell us that either that he didn't kiss him wholeheartedly because he tried to bite him, or how unusual it was that he kissed him wholeheartedly because usually Esav son of Yaakov. So in general, the dots tell us to look out for something.
By Esav, right?
Yeah, by Esav, yeah. So that's by Elov, it's that they ask Sarah, where, how is Avraham doing, etc. Yeah. So the same thing over here, we learn from that. Shalom Yimdid, Loibishal Gimel, Lakhar, Loibishal Shnaim Laayah. From that dot, we learn this concept that you don't have larger ones than an Isarin. You only measure with a one Isarin container. And if you need two or three Isarinim, then you still measure two or three times. Vira Meir, and the Meir would answer, Nikudah, Loidorish, I don't doubt you anything from the Nikud. It is Halachal Mishim Sinai that you have to put it. Although, mind you, actually, you actually have a Medrash that says that dots actually come from Ezra. Some of these words have dots, like so to speak, Ezra wasn't sure whether they should be in the Torah or not. Maybe he had different Sifrei Torah in front of him, whatever. So I think it's an opposite of nothing. He says, that I put dots over the words, so this way, like if Moshe Rabbeinu says to me, well, why'd you write these words? Okay, but I put dots over them to show that they don't belong there, that they should be deleted. But I wrote them because if he says that they're supposed to be there, good, then they're there, I wrote them. So this way, like this way he's covering his bases. But anyway, the point is, Rav Meir is not dowshining anything from the dot, so therefore he has to have the vav of the Sarin for that purpose. So then the idea would be, in other words, that I guess when Ezra was that he had different Sifrei Torah in front of him, you have it. When Ezra was looking over. So that's the thing. So like this, he says, but they are not a sit of nothing. He says, if Moshe tells me you're supposed to write these words, good, then I wrote them. If Moshe tells me, no, this word doesn't belong here, okay, but I put dots over it to show that it doesn't really belong there.
Oh.
So this way, like, he has all his bases covered. Yeah.
The dots will show enough.
So the dots, so to speak, shows, like, maybe it should be there, maybe not. But apparently, so maybe the idea is the Chachamim disagree with that concept. They would say that the dots are part of our local emotion sunai. Therefore, we can darshan from them. Whereas a mayor might be going according to that thing. From Allah said, I'm not saying that Ezra added them because he wasn't sure, and therefore, lab gaps from can darshan from them.
I don't know.
So to speak, yeah, like in modern terms, like in modern terms, you strike through the word, but you could also sometimes, like, you put a line over the word, a dot over the word to show that it doesn't belong there. Yeah. By the way, the Mesha Chachma brings up an interesting point. So we have many korbanos mosef that are described before that. Why do we wait until the korbanos of Sukkot to have this dot over the word that you saw? Right? This is an interesting idea. Because you find Sukkim in Yechezkel that mention an Eifa measurement. We had it a few blocks ago. An Eifa is 10 Esroinim. So normally you're not bringing as many as 10 Esroinim together. So obviously you're going to measure using something that's sized in Esroinim, whether it's 1 Esroin, 2, 3, whatever. You wouldn't have a reason to think that you should use something that holds 10 Esroinim. But on Sukkot, each day you're bringing 14 sheep. So just for the menachas of the sheep alone, you need 14 Esroinim. So you would think maybe you should be measuring with an Eifa measure for 10 of them. No, therefore you have the dots over there to tell you even then you're still measuring out individually with the 1 Esar and 14 Esar.
Very efficient.
Okay. All right. Then he said in the Mishnah, Hatsi Esar and Maha Yomashamish. So what did they use the half Esar in for? They used it, Shaboy HaYomoded B'Chavite Kohen Gadol. They measured out the flour for the Chavite Kohen Gadol with that. The question is, what do you mean, moded? What do you mean they measure it out, which makes it sound like, to begin with, he brings a half Esar in, and they put it into that to measure it. Urimi, he have a contradiction. We learned earlier in the Masechta, Chavite Kohen Gadol Lahoyu Boin Chatzoin. The Chavite Kohen Gadol weren't brought by halves, Ella maybe Esar in Shalom, because they had to bring a whole Esar in of flour from his house in the morning, and then they divided it. So moded makes it sound like, to begin with, they measured it using the half Esar in. That's the answer. Omer of Shesha. My murder. Nami jikatani machal. You don't mean measuring as in the original measuring. You mean dividing it after the holy Torah was brought and put into a klisharis. After that, they need to divide it in half. They need one half and the other half, and therefore for that they would use the half Torah. Okay. Bomine Romi Bachama Merav Chisseh. So now Romi Bachama asks your Chisseh as follows. We said in the Mishnah that appointed of mayor, you had two types of Esarin, one that holds an Esarin when it's heaped up, and one that holds an Esarin when it's flattened out. What about the half Esarin? Chatsi Esarin lada mayor, godosh haya ay mocho kaya. According to the mayor, this half Esarin, how was it made? Was it made that it holds a half Esarin only when it's heaped up, or when it's flattened out, which would mean that it's larger? And we have a simon chatsi chavite shulchan, because we're going to have similar questions. Rami Bachama is going to ask Rav Chisda three questions, which this is the simon for keywords from them. So chatsi is the one we just had, chatsi is sonen, and then we're going to have another one about chavite kohen gadol and another one about the shulchan. Okay, so my ask is, he's very lucky that I'm born. Why is Rami Bachama asking the question only according to the mayor? Shouldn't he ask according to the Chachamim also? You should ask, what is the according to the Chachamim, the half Esarin, is it meant to be heaped up or is it meant to be flattened out? The answer is, well, Abbanan Esarin Gufe Kamed Ba'yelahu, Godesh Hoya Imachokaya. Okay, according to the, with the Abbanan, you're not even asking about the holy, about the half Esarin, you have to first ask about the holy Esarin. What was it made? Was it made to hold a holy Esarin when it was flat or when it was heaped? Yes.
Well, you can ask both.
So that's the point, in other words. So he's asking Chatsi Esarin because according to the mayor, we know that there were two types of Esarin. The only question is about the half Esarin. Right, according to the Chachamim, we first have to figure out about the whole Esarin. And then, so the answer is, Amalei, so Rav Chisda answers like this. Neither the mayor, Nishma, or the mayor, based on one thing that the mayor said, we can deduce another thing that the mayor would say. And then in turn, based on what the mayor says, we can deduce from it what the Chachamim would say. Because we know we have the machloikas between him and the Chachamim about how many measuring cups there were. But there's no other machloikas between them other than whether there were two or three. So once we figure out what the mayor's shitta is, then from that we can figure out what the Chachamim's shitta is. So let's see. The only thing we know they argue about is two versus three.
And the Chaim is two has three.
No, according to the Chaim there's two. According to the mayor there's three. Wait. Hold on. Then we'll know what the Chaim is. Yeah. Neither Amr of Mayor Isaroin Mahuk, given that the mayor is saying the Isaroin that they used for the Minchas Chavitin originally had to be the larger one, the one that holds an Isaroin when it's flattened out. Therefore, Chatsi Esarin Nami Mahok, then logically the half Esarin, which is also used for the Chavite Kohen Gadol, must also be one that held a half Esarin when it's flattened out. Now, I mean, the first one points out, it's not exactly the same. We said before the reason why you would not want to have a heat one for the Chavetz Chaim Gadol is you don't want to spill. Here, it's not really so much an issue of it spilling, but still, once you have that one of them is muffled, the pastures we want to make the other one, we want to be able to make them in such a way that we can make sure that it holds exactly half of the other one, and therefore, we're going to want to make sure that they both use a similar standard.
But the Chaim Gadol, it has to be certain, so it's making it proper.
No, that's the point. In other words, we could have argued that for the holy Sardin, we can't be heat because we don't want it to spill when we're carrying it around. But once we get to the happy Sardin, it's not going from there into anything else, therefore it's no problem if it's heaped up. But on the other hand, we also want to make sure that the happy Sardin is exactly half of the holy Sardin. So logically, if the holy Sardin is going to be flat, then the happy Sardin should also be flat so we can make sure it's exactly half. So therefore, midrav meir machok l'rabbanan nami machok. Therefore, we can deduce from that if the meir says that the happy sardin was flat, and even he says there was only one happy sardin measure because he didn't need more than one. Regular people's menachos never consist of half any sardin. Therefore, since the chachamim are not arguing with him about heat or not heat, we can deduce from that the chachamim would say that the chassi sardin was also machok, was also one that held a happy sardin when it's flat.
Yeah,
machok means flat, right? To be exact, actually, the Gemara in Bava Basra explains the typical way they would measure things like flour or whatever in containers in those days is they'd pour it into the container and then they'd use a leveling stick to level it off. So that's what we mean. That's when we say machuk, and machuk literally means erased or leveled off. That's what it means, that they'd take the extra part that was in the heap above it and level it off using a stick. Okay. So that's question number one. And so now we have the answer that the Chachamim would say that the happy sardin was one that held a happy sardin when it was flattened out. Next question. We didn't know. Now we have
they level it off. What they do with the rest of it?
The rest of it didn't become Kaddish because
they threw it away. Or
not threw it away. They would keep it for the next one. Okay. Second question. Bominei Romi Bachama Merachisa. Chavitei Kohen Gadol B'mamach Halkan Mechalek. The Chavitei Kohen Gadol were saying they offered half of it, a half of the in the morning, a half in the afternoon. How did they divide up the Chalek? The Yad or the Kli? By hand or using a case. Now, what do we mean by dividing them? So Rashi explains that we're talking about after they kneaded them into a dough, they would have to split it half for the morning, half for the afternoon. So the question is how they're splitting the dough. Tosfos says no. Tosfos says actually what it means is while it was still flour that you're splitting it. So the question is, do you split it using a keli to make sure that you have, to make sure that the flour is exactly half and half? Or do you just split it by hand and it may be approximate, it may not be precise, but it's good enough as long as it looks the same. The Rambam has yet a third shitta. Now the Rambam has a unique shitta as far as the Chavitei Kohen Gadol. We know that they made it into 12 chalos and they offered half of it in the morning and half of it in the afternoon. Most of the Rishonim learn that it means they offered 6 chalos in the morning and the other 6 in the afternoon. The Rambam uniquely holds that they took the 12 chalos themselves and cut each challah in half, or broke each challah in half, and offered 12 halves in the morning and 12 halves in the afternoon. And the Nosei Kalim on the Rambam says, he gets that from our Gemara over here, that when the Gemara is asking how they divided the challahs, the Rambam understands it means after they're baked. So we have 3 shittas, as flour according to Tosfos, as dough according to Rashi, or as baked challahs according to that. Anyway, so did they divide them in biyad or the kli? The Gemara answers, shitta to biyad. The obvious answer is that they did it by hand.
Now, the fact that you take 4 chalos, you just take 6 and 6. No, it had to be each chalos you broke in half.
According to the Rambam, yes, and that's what he's saying. That's what we're saying. He's getting that from this Gemara over here. Otherwise, if they just needed 6 and 6, there's nothing to ask about. So the Kli, by the way, yes, so the answer is Pshita de Biyad. Obviously, they did it by hand. The Iba Kli, because if you're going to tell me they had to use a Kli, what kind of Kli do you mean? Chiturch and the Yachnit. Are we supposed to bring in a scale into the Azorah so to make sure that it weighs, that each part weighs exactly the same?
No.
Well, what's the problem? So the question is, the Yachnit, why not? Yeah, bring in a scale. What's the problem? The answer is Kibin de Biklolok is because where do you find the concept of weighing food in the Torah? You find it in the Toichacha in the Toichacha in Parshas B'chukosai. There you have it. They have offu esem noshim lachmacham b'taner echad ve'hishivu lachmacham b'mishlo. You're going to have 10 women are going to have to bake their bread in one oven because there's going to be a shortage of wood. And then they're going to have to weigh out the bread because it actually explains over there it's going to be bad quality and it's going to crumble and therefore like they have to weigh out the crumbs to make sure of it. So it's in Parshas B'chukosai in the Toichacha. So therefore, so the concept of weighing out food like that is associated with a klala, keeping them a klala, because of lava or dachara. No, but it means therefore, so therefore lava or dachara, so it's not respectable to bring a scale into the Beis Hamikdash to weigh it like that. And by the way, here's the Noisa Kalim points out on the Rambam, here's a strong proof for what the Rambam is saying. Because if we're talking about measuring flour, or we're talking about measuring dough, like Rashi and Tosfos are saying, so what's the big deal? I mean, the Pasuk is talking about weighing bread. Mashenkin, if you say that it was already baked, and now we're talking about, yeah, then it's exactly like it says in Bechokosai, and therefore we don't want to do that. No, it's not
what does the Rambam say?
So the Rambam explains that we're talking about weighing, we're talking about how you break up the chalice after they're baked. And the answer is that you do it beyond. You do it by hand, and yeah, it comes out approximately a half. You do it as close as possible to a half, but you're not going to go sit there weighing it with a scale.
How do you do it? You can't, but you got to cut it with a knife. You can't bake it like this. You can't have half and half exactly.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's the point. In other words, you do it beyond. You estimate by hand without measuring it exactly. You estimate that it should be as close as possible to a half.
If you have a knife and you measure it with a measure, you can do it exactly. But you tear it up with your hand.
No, that doesn't matter.
One piece goes into the other. How can you do it?
No, I wouldn't mean one piece goes into the other. You have a piece of bread, you tear it in half like that.
Yeah, but the piece of the crumb.
Okay. Third question. Bomine Romi Bachama Merachista. Now Romi Bachama asks your Chista. Here's the third question in our series. Shulchan Maoshi Kaddish Kmasin Begoyish Shaloi. The Shulchan, which we're going to learn more about, the Shulchan and the Lachim Afanim in the next parak, that's the Shem, can it be Makadish of Kaimet on the overflow of it? So first of all, we have to ask what kind of Kaimet and what do we mean by the overflow? So the Kaimet, Rashi explains, means like this. We learned before in our Masechta, and we're going to learn in the next parak, that we say it every Shabbos, after Musa, that you have, together with the Lachim Afanim, you have two spoonfuls of Torah that go on the Shulchan, and then every Shabbos, when they take off the old Lachim Afanim, they burn the Torah on the Levoina, rather, not Torah, Levoina, they burn the Levoina on the Mizbeach, and they distribute the Lachim Afanim and the Kohenim.
You take it from the Shulchan?
So they have, all week long, they're sitting on the Shulchan, 12 Lachim Afanim and two spoonfuls each containing Levoina. Incense, bazichin, they're called, yes. Then on Shabbos, they take off the lachem afanim, they take off the bazichin, they replace them with new ones, the contents of the bazichin are burnt on the mizbeach, and the 12 lachem afanim are divided up among the kohanim. But Rashi explains the question is, if they were to put the handfuls of levoina on the shulchan, not in spoons, would the shulchan be makadish then?
And after they take it with their hand and put it on the
mizbeach? That's the question. Would it be Makadish then that now it's kosher that the following Shabbos they can take it and burn it on the mizbeach, or does it have to be in the spoon? Mm-hmm. Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says we're not talking about the levoina, that definitely has to be in spoons. No, rather Tosfos says it means a regular mincha. If you were to take the kohenus of a regular mincha, we learned earlier in our Masechta, you take that kohenus, the kohen takes that handful, he's supposed to put it in another kli sharis and then carry that over to the mizbeach and take it from the kli sharis and throw it into the fire. But for now the question is, what if he were to take the kohenus and place it on the shulchan? Would the shulchan be makadish that kohenus as if it was a regular kli sharis? No, we discussed it briefly earlier in the Masechta, but yeah. For now, so this is the question. So would the Shulchan be Makadish Kohenus? Now, what do we mean by Kohenus? So whether we mean the Levoina, or whether we mean, according to Rashi, we mean the Levoina, or according to Tosfos, we mean a Kohenus. The other question is what we mean by Goyish Shaloi. So Rashi Ksavyad explains that Goyish Shaloi means that the shulchan is a flat surface. It's not a container. It doesn't have sides. So therefore, goyda shalom is on top of the shulchan. Mm-hmm. Effectively, that's the equivalent of with a regular keli. That would be the equivalent of it being over the rim of the keli. Miuchas Rashi says another possibility is it could mean not directly on top of the shulchan, but rather higher up. We're going to learn in the next parak when we talk about the lachem aponim. You have two stacks of lachem aponim. They extend, as we're going to say in a minute in our Gemara, they extend several tefachim above the height of the shulchan. So the question would be, what if you put this kohenus leboiner or kohenus of mincha, as the case may be, on top of the lachem aponim, or someplace higher up on the shulchan? Yeah. The question is, midi makadish lachem kmosin. We'll see in the next parak we'll talk about. Midi makadish lechem, do we say, since the shulchan is able to be makadish the lechem upon him upon it, therefore, kmosim nami makadish, therefore it can also be makadish the koinsim of levoina or of mincha, or Doma, or maybe not. The Chazi Le Mekadesh, like Chazi Le Mekadesh. Maybe the Shulchan can only be Mekadesh things that are suitable to be placed on it, namely the actual Lechem Aponim and the Levona in the spoons, but not Levona without spoons, and not the Koymus of a Mincha. That's the question. Amaloi, so Rechis answers in Einu Mekadesh. You're right, it's not Mekadesh, it's not Mekadesh.
If it's
Levona without spoons, or a Koymus of a Mincha. Okay, so the Gemara, is that so? We're going to learn in the next parak that Rabbi Yechanan says, now we're going to say, you just asked how big the Shulchan is, we're going to have a machlokus about that in the next parak. In general, you have a machlokus in a number of places in Shas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. We know that the amos that we use for buildings are 6 tefachim long. You have a machlokus whether the amos that we use for kalim are also 6 tefachim long, or whether the shorter amos are 5 tefachim. It comes up in Baba Basra in connection with the size of the Aron, and it's going to come up in the next parak in connection with the size of the Shulchan. Now, based on that, you also have a machlokas. The Lechem Aponim were a certain size. Everybody agrees to the size of that. So the question is, based on that machlokas, you end up with a machlokas. How much of the size of the Lechem Aponim was folded up? We're going to learn in the next parak that the Lechem Aponim was shaped like an open box or like a ship. So therefore, you had sides going up on the you had side panels going up on the sides. How tall were those side panels? So we're going to discuss that. So, and Rabbi Yechanan says, according to the opinion that the Shulchan was smaller, which is Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore they had to fold up on each side of the Lechem Aponim 2.5 tefachim of the Lechem Aponim had to be folded upward to make the side panel. Well then, 6 Lechem Aponim, one on top of the other, 6 times 2.5 equals 15. Nimsa Shulchan Mekadesh Hamisha Ota Tefach Lamayla. Then it comes out, the Shulchan is able to be Mekadesh things up to 15 tefachim above its surface. And the Dibra Omitzvachayim Kofel, according to the mayor, who says over there that the Shulchan was a little bit larger, and they only needed to fold up 2 tefachim on each side to make the side panels. Then 6 times 2 is 12, so Mekadesh Shulchan, Nimsa Shulchan Mekadesh Yudbeis Tefach Lamayla, so the Shulchan is able to be Mekadesh things up to 12 tefachim off its surface. Now obviously Rabbi Yechanan doesn't need to tell us. We can do the math ourselves. The point that Rabbi Yechanan is making is, in other words, apparently, that the Shulchan can be Mekadesh not only the Lechem Aponim, but anything else that's placed within 12 or 15 tefachim of the surface. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Chista, that the Shulchan can't be Mekadesh, the Levona without spoons, or the Koymus of the Mincha? According to Rabbi Yechanan, it sounds like it could, as long as it's within 12 or 15 tefachim of the surface of the Shulchan. The answer is, Amalei, so Rabbi Chista answers, you're right. What I mean is, Eina Mekadesh Likram. It's not Mekadesh, the Levona or the Koymet, insofar as that you can be makhluv it on the Mizeach. Av Mekadesh li posel. However, it is Mekadesh it to the extent that it can become posel with the usual things that Todshim can become posel with. For example, if a Tzvul Yoyim touches it, if it's taken out of the Azara.
So
it is Mekadesh, but not to the extent where it can be offered on the Mizeach. So according to Rashi, that we're talking about the Levona, which is supposed to be in spoons, so you're right, it didn't yet have Kedusha Zagruf up to that point, because putting it in a Kli Sharet gives it Kedusha Zagruf. Normally it would be placed in the spoons, which are a Kli Sharet. In this case, you put it on the Shulchan. Kedusha Zagruf it now has, but to offer it on the Mizeach, you would have to put it in the spoons and leave it there in the spoons throughout the week. According to Tosfos, that we're talking about the Koymus of a Mincha, the Koymus of a Mincha already has Kedusha Zagruf from beforehand, because the whole Mincha was in a Kli Sharet. So therefore, Tosfos understands that Mekadesh li posel a little bit differently, that it means that it will become posel if a Tzvul Yoyim touches it, or if it's taken out of the Azara that you had already before. What it means, Mekadesh li posel, means that you can't, if it hadn't gone on the Shulchan, you would have been able to take this Koymus, put it back in with the rest of the Mincha, and take a Koymus, and the Kohen will take the Koymus again and do the thing properly. Like this, where it was placed on the Shulchan, what it will mean is that Koymus is now posel, and therefore the Mincha as a whole is posel.
Because
it was placed on a Keli, which is able to be Mekadesh it with the Kedusha of the Koymus, but not to the extent where it can now be offered on the Mizbeach. Because the Shulchan is not meant for Koymusim of Mincha. The Shulchan is meant for the Lachan Aponim and the spoonfuls of Levona. So that would explain. So when Rabbi Yochanan says that up to 12 or 15 Tefachim off the surface of the Shulchan is Mekadesh, it means, says Tosfos, if you were to put this Koymus of a Mincha on the Shulchan within 12 or 15 tefachim of the surface, now that Mincha becomes possible, and there's nothing further you can do with it. As opposed to if you had not put it on the Shulchan, or if you had put it higher up than that, above the Shulchan, then fine, you could put it back in the container. Let's say it's for example, I don't know, you put something on the shulchan and put it on top of it. I don't know, whatever. I'm sure you could find
it.
Yeah, let's say, whatever. Or you also have, we're going to learn in the next parak, you have sniffing, you have the side frames that went next to the shulchan, those extend pretty high up, so maybe you put it on top of those, let's say, whatever. The point is, as long as it was in high enough off the shulchan, then the shulchan won't have been mekadesh it, and therefore you can put it back into the mincha and start over again. But if it had been within 12 or 15, then that's it. The mincha is possible. That's how Tosfos is.
Why
because now it's too late. You put it into a kli, because Tosfos is the same. We're talking about the claimants of a mincha. The claimants of a mincha, after you take it out from the mincha, the first thing is you need to put it into a proper kli sharis. Like this, you put it into a kli sharis, but the wrong kind. Therefore, it makes it, it's too late to return it to the original mincha, but you can't be makir of it either. So therefore, you're stuck. Therefore, the mincha is called. Yeah, the shulchan is on that. According to Tosfos, there's no question about the Levina. Obviously, the shulchan is not going to be makadosh to the Levina unless it's in the spoon. So if you put it on there without the spoon, if you put it there without the spoon, the Tosfos learns, okay, then obviously it doesn't have the kedusha of the Levina. You have to put it in the spoons, and it has to stay there all week. Yeah, you can take it out and put it in the spoon. It won't become possible because of that, right?
As opposed to the claimant,
which will actually, then it becomes the choice learns that it becomes false.
The empty out the spoon and take it away, the bottle?
No, we're going to learn in the next parak how they replace the lacham afanim every week. We have two different tannaim on it, but you have the one tanna says, and the halacha is like that, that as they're removing the old lacham afanim at the same time you have other kohenim that are putting on the new lacham afanim, so that the shulchan is not empty for even a second. And you have the other opinion.
Each color they take off, yeah. Another current.
We're gonna talk about till we get to that static valve, static case, static valve. We're gonna talk about it. So yeah. Okay.
Yeah.